I'm in a place of complete bliss. When I'm swimming, I feel freer than I feel anywhere else in the world. My body is not constricted. I don't have the limitations that MS imposes on me. And then I'm just, because of that, I'm relaxed and happy, and I have all my best friends around me, so I couldn't be happier. You can't just jump in and swim 70 kilometers. You need a crew beside you to keep you safe, especially when you're swimming overnight. You can fall asleep in the water. When people say you can't do something, what I like to say is, how can I help? How can I help you do that? You want to do that? Yes. What can I do to help you get there? And we need to change that. We all need to start doing that and say, okay, well, maybe you can't do it tomorrow, but if you train for it in 5 years, maybe you can do it. So let's see if you can. You are of value. You have value in this world. We're beat down all the time. Like when we, you know, when I was sent home, go home, don't do anything, just stay at home. That sends a message of you have no value anymore. That's not true. Every person in the world has value. You're important. So recognize that you have value. And then find people who lift you up.
Okay.
Hang out with people that go, yeah, I'll give you a hand with that, or I believe in you. Surround yourself with that, and it's just amazing what can happen. In the same way that I was told you can't do that, and I ended up not being healthy, I feel sometimes people with disabilities are told that. They are. I don't feel it. They are. So I decided to untell them that. Getting out there and being involved with people is part of how we stay healthy. We can just make a better world if we all help one another, do amazing, wonderful things instead of pulling each other apart. Try things as long as you're staying safe. Like if you can minimize risk and stay safe, try it. Like get out there and do stuff and live your best possible self, live a great life. It's possible for people to achieve amazing things. You just gotta get out there and do it.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to It's the Climb, the podcast that helps you climb your everyday mountains. I'm your co-host, Jonas Kane, here to introduce today's episode, an episode that's a little different than our previous episodes. It's different because I wasn't there for the recording. Andy Berger, my co-host, was flying solo with this one, and he did a great job, as always, taking the lead with meaningful and thought-provoking questions. I wasn't there for the interview because I was away volunteering as a counselor for a youth leadership camp run by the American Legion and American Legion Auxiliary, a program called Boys State and Girls State. These programs are for juniors in high school to live on a college campus for a week, meet people from all walks of life, and engage in learning activities that help them to become independent thinkers, active citizens, and thoughtful leaders. And most of all, giving them a taste of what life after high school will be like. I've been a volunteer for the program for over 22 years, and I count it as some of my most important work every year. And even though it's an exhausting week, I simply couldn't miss it, so that's why you won't hear me during the interview. But even though I'm not there, you're in for a treat, because we have an amazing guest for you. In this episode, Andy sat down with Susan Simmons. Susan is a Canadian marathon swimmer living with MS, multiple sclerosis, a chronic and progressive autoimmune disease that impacts the brain's nerve cells and spinal cord, leading to symptoms such as uncontrolled spasms, dizziness, weakness, fatigue, pain, and impaired vision, balance, and coordination, just to name a few. Susan was diagnosed in 1995 at the age of 30 and was told to avoid exercise because doctors feared it would put her at risk of permanent nerve damage. But after 10 years of rest, her condition only worsened, and it became clear that if she did not do something, she would soon be in a wheelchair. And so in 2005, Susan shifted her focus to fitness as her final hope of managing the disease. But because MS is often a heat-sensitive disease, with exercise causing attacks as the body's temperature rises, she turned to swimming as a low-impact form of exercise that could also keep her cool. After training for 7 years, she competed in her first 10-kilometer ocean swim in Vancouver, a swim of over 6 miles, placing first in her division. And she has since gone on to compete in a number of open water marathon swims, including an over 43-mile unassisted swim, which she completed in just over 31 hours. Susan's accomplishments are incredible, but what makes them even more remarkable is knowing what she has had to overcome in order to achieve them. She is truly an inspiration to everyone, demonstrating what's possible when you just get out there and do it. You are going to love today's episode, so sit back, relax, and enjoy the climb. But first, here's Andy with a word from our sponsors.
Hey everybody, we have some news from one of our great sponsors, Rind Snacks. In addition to their awesome line of chewy dried fruit, they also now have crispy ones. Think apple, orange, and they're chips, like potato chips, but with a much healthier option. My favorite is the crispy apple. It's a crispy chip that's just fruit. No added sugar, no preservatives, 100% apple. So it's super healthy with all the antioxidants, nutrients, and no added sugar. It's a chip that you can enjoy during a sporting event or on the go, and it's a great way to get your fiber in for the day at the same time. They give you a discount from their website every month, and this month they're giving you 15% off and donating $5 to Camp Brave Trails for LGBTQ kids. So go to rindsnacks.com and at checkout type in Brave, B-R-A-V-E, to make the donation and to get 15% off. That's RINDSNACKS and enter BRAVE at checkout. So they'll donate $5 on your behalf and give you 15% discount. This coffee break is sponsored by Kuju Coffee. Who doesn't love their coffee that we've been talking about for months, where it's a pour over that's portable. It's in a small, tiny teabag size pouch that you can travel with. When I go to hotels, I always bring it for a reliable, delicious, convenient pour over coffee. But now what I do in the summertime is I don't tear open the little top that opens up for the pour over. I just toss a couple of these little pouches into a small carafe of water overnight, you know, basically for 18 to 24 hours. And next morning, I've got amazing cold brew coffee ready to go for me. All you do is add these pouches, one, two, or three, to some amount of water overnight, stick it in your fridge, and you wake up to delicious, very easy cold brew. That's another great convenience of these amazing Kuju pods. And they're offering you, as they always do, 20% off your order today when you go to kujucoffee.com and enter KUJU 20 at checkout. That's www.kujucoffee.com and enter KUJU 20 at checkout. And check out this really cool idea of making cold brew.
You're in Montreal and you were born in Montreal, right?
Born and raised in Montreal. Okay. And moved to British Columbia, the other side of Canada, in my 30s.
Where'd you go to university?
I went to Concordia.
Okay.
Yeah. So when I completed university in Concordia, I was studying applied social science, which is community development. Nice. At its finest. Okay. I moved out west, lived in North Vancouver for a while, and eventually moved to Victoria, which is on Vancouver Island.
Yes. I lived out in Vancouver for a couple of years. I loved it.
Okay.
I loved it. Yeah. Not a lot of vitamin D happening out there, but it's a great place to live.
It is a great place to live. And if you're an ocean swimmer, it's a wonderful place to be. Vancouver Island in particular. Okay. I have a lot of places where I can go swim. So it's quite nice. All year in Montreal, it's harder. The lake freezes.
That's a whole different cold plunge training we can get into later.
Yeah.
So you moved out there before you had been diagnosed with multiple sclerosis?
Yes, I did. Okay. And at a certain point out here, I went temporary blind in one eye. And that was how I was diagnosed. I had optic neuritis. At first, the doctor said, oh, were you drinking last night? And
oh my gosh.
Kind of frustrated me a little bit. I thought, wow, good doctor. Anyway, he sent me away and said, if it happens again, come back. So it did. So I went back. And the second time, it was actually quite painful. I remember feeling like a stabbing in my eye. And so it must have been really bad. But at that point, he sent me to another specialist who was really amazing and took great care of me and said, do you want to get tested for this, for MS?
Okay.
And he really wanted me to think about it, whether I wanted to know or not.
Really? Interesting.
Well, I think that sometimes it has implications for your employment.
Okay. That's a Canadian thing. Okay.
And also it may have implications for your health care.
Okay. Sure.
So it was, do you want to know? But I felt it was better to know so I could start actively doing something. So I did, and I was diagnosed and then went to a neurologist, and the neurologist said, don't exercise. That was the only advice I was really given. Because he thought he was going to trigger my MS. And then later I went to a family doctor, and that family doctor said, don't become a vegan. So I'm a little rebellious.
Just do the opposite of people doing it.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Well, I listened at first. I followed the instructions, and but it just wasn't working. And I thought, I can't do something that isn't working. I've got to try and do something.
Sure.
So I did.
This is 1995, and you're basically 30 years old. You're young.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I did nothing for 10 years. I went home and I prepared a life for somebody with a disability where I would not be able to work. I thought, because I always became blind, that I would become a computer programmer.
Okay.
Because I knew that I could do that if I was visually impaired, that there was technologies that would help me. And I chose to work from home where I had less stress. I ran my own tech company and did really well, but I isolated myself, which is not a good thing.
Right.
Like, we need to be out there in the world, having relationships with people and interacting with the environment. So I just got sicker and sicker because I wasn't taking care of my physical being.
Okay. And so you're living in North Van at the time?
I'm in North Vancouver at the time.
Okay.
And 10 years in, when I was 40, my partner yelled at me in a very loving kind of way, because he could see I was declining and he was very scared. So I decided to make a change.
Okay.
And
mobility was limited?
Well, I was out of shape, and I also had a lot of MS symptoms. Okay. So I was fatigued all the time. I couldn't walk more than a block without getting really tired. And that's a combination of both MS progressing and also of not exercising. If I would step out in the heat, my legs would go numb. I had Olofs on when I would lean forward, my spine would be like a zipper up and down my spine, all kinds of stuff happening. So I just decided to start swimming. Because it was a way to exercise and stay cool.
Yeah.
I didn't have to worry about overheating in the pool.
Yeah.
And just jumped in and been swimming ever since.
And you don't have the pounding on your feet.
Yeah, I wasn't on my feet. It's low impact.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of benefits to swimming. But for me in particular, it was part of my history. I used to be a competitive swimmer. Okay. So it was a form of exercise that I like. But the more important thing was that I was cooling off all of the time as I swam. And it was a way to get exercise without overheating.
Okay.
And it worked.
So you started swimming and a couple laps and went home for a 2-hour nap.
Yeah, I would come home, have a 2-hour nap, and then I'd go back a second time and do the same thing. And because I worked from home, I was able to do that. I was very fortunate. And eventually built myself up to swimming with a master's club, which I never thought I would do again. Like when I stopped swimming as a youth, I had no desire to go back. And then started swimming with them and then started competing. The coach convinced me to go into swim meets and things like that. So I did and had fun. I met all kinds of people, and it was a way to keep me fit and keep me engaged, because I get bored quite easily. So,
how do you swim for hours? And
I do. Yeah, that's a whole other thing. That's a very meditative state.
Okay.
But I swam with this club in North Vancouver for quite some time, and the coach was amazing, because I would eventually overheat in the water if I was sprinting. He would bring me a jug of cold water that I could pour on my head all the time.
Okay.
And I would do that. And eventually I was able to get in the gym and start weightlifting and add to it, do a little bit of cardio.
Okay.
And then I moved to Victoria and discovered open water. And there was this, I was worried with swimming, I would get bored of competition because it was the same thing over and over again. And but there was a swim called the Thetis Lake Swim for MS. And I thought it was for people with MS. I didn't realize it was to raise money for MS. So I just thought, I'm going to do this. And it was 1.5 kilometer swim around a beautiful, gentle lake that is now my training lake. And I loved it. I did really well in the event. And I decided I'm going to do 3 kilometers next year, and then the following year did 5, and then the year after that I did 5 plus 1.5 kilometers and ran out of lake. I couldn't do the event anymore because I had already completed everything that I could. So I turned to the ocean and did 10K, and then back to a lake and did 35, and progressed up to 70 kilometers over time.
So for us Americans,
70 kilometers,
about 31. About 43 miles.
Yeah, around 43 miles. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And 10 kilometers is the Olympic event. It's the Olympic distance for open water swim.
So it's 6.2 miles.
Is yeah. Okay. And so I did 10 marathons or 7 marathon swims consecutively.
Okay. So a marathon swim is considered 10 kilometers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you did 7 of them. Okay.
Yeah. And then I play around.
31 hours, right?
It was 31 hours, swam overnight, had some amazing hallucinations, was a little scary at points, but I had a really good crew with me of people that were taking care of me, and it was incredible to be in that.
So you're moving consecutively for 31 hours?
Yeah, what you do is you swim for half an hour, and then you pause and tread water, and your crew throws you food and liquid, you'd have a bit of food, and then you carry on and you do it again for another half an hour, and you keep going until you get to where you want to be.
You get to where you want to be. 43 miles away. So how do you train for 31?
For something like that. Well, I do a lot of, I swim a lot, but I also do weightlifting. I was outrigger canoeing as well, which is the Hawaiian style canoe. I was doing that as well. So a little bit of cross training, but swim probably 20 to 30 hours of training a week, depending on where I am.
20 to 30 hours. So that's 4 to 5 hours a day in a
pool. Yeah. Yeah. So I would start with in peak season, I was doing 2 hours in the morning and at least 2 at night. Plus I might be doing outrigger canoe. On weekends, I would do back to back, probably 10 mile swims.
Okay.
So I would do one on Saturday, one on Sunday, just to build up the capacity to manage the volume, but also to manage psychologically having my face in the water for that long, because you don't get to talk to a lot of people, right? You're in your own thought for 31 hours.
Now, yeah, we've had a bunch of guests on who have done amazing things similar to yours, and they get in that flow state where they're in that zone and nothing really phases them. You able to achieve that in the water for 30 minutes?
Yeah. Yeah. You mean getting in that zone of you're just, yes, yeah. You are. I'm in a place of complete bliss when I'm swimming. I feel freer than I feel anywhere else in the world. My body is not constricted. I don't have the limitations that MS imposes on me. And then I'm just, because of that, I'm relaxed and happy, and I have all my best friends around me, so I couldn't be happier.
Were your best friends being the fish or best friends?
Well, they're the crew. So I have a crew on a suit. Like, you can't just jump in and swim 70 kilometers, you need a crew beside you to keep you safe, especially when you're swimming overnight, you can fall asleep in the water. There are always people that are very close to me. One of them, my partner, Ray, he's been on pretty much every one of my swims beside me. And then I've got some really close friends from the paddle or, and swim community and the MS community that also join me.
Yeah.
And they give you chocolate. You get to have chocolate for the entire time you're swimming. Who? Come on.
Chocolate. Yeah, I was thinking this is crazy until you told me that. Now I got this is something I want to try.
It's all about the chocolate and peanut butter.
Sure. I was going to ask you what you're consuming. So chocolate, peanut butter?
Yeah, I have a chocolate peanut butter bars because I want to sustain my energy because it's not a quick event. I might have cantaloupe. I just like it. It refreshes my mouth when I'm in the water. Bananas as well if I need a little boost. And I use a green tea kind of caffeine drink that keeps me up and alert, hopefully, throughout the night.
Nice. So it's a day, basically a day and a half, right?
Yeah. I have one coming up that's 50 kilometers, so a little bit less. That'll take about 24 hours. So I have to start night training where I stay up all night just to do a little bit of, this is what it's going to feel like to stay up all night.
Okay. And you attempted 100 kilometer, a 62 mile swim.
I did. I attempted it was 105. It would have been the world record at the time. And I did it with my friend Alex. So unfortunately, the first night of the event, I got really sick. There was a whole bunch of stuff going on that made me very nervous. So I got really sick and purged all of my food, and I couldn't eat for several hours. Mm. So I swam for 18 hours on almost no fuel. And at that point, I thought I made it to 43 or 48 kilometers. And I thought, I'm making myself sick. I'm going to hurt myself if I continue. So I chose to exit the water. I don't want to ever hurt myself on a swim. That's not why I do it. It's about being healthy.
Sure.
So if I did get sick on a swim where I, you know, an ambulance had to come or something like that, I feel I'm sending the wrong message.
Okay. It's a tough call because, you know, we talked to a bunch of climbers, like when do you turn around? When do you quit? Yeah. And a lot of these people don't have a quit button.
Yeah. I can relate to that, but I also have this very intense safety button.
Okay.
And I always go back to, why am I here? Well, I'm here to be healthy.
Right.
This is why I swim. I swim to manage my MS, and doing something that hurts my body isn't helping me manage my MS.
Sure. So are all these swims in basically in British Columbia, or are you traveling around someplace for those?
The majority of them are in British Columbia. They started on Vancouver Island at a place called Lake Cowichan. And then I moved up to the central coast of British Columbia, which is halfway between Vancouver and Alaska.
Okay.
So you're moving halfway up the coast to a place called Bella Bella. It's a First Nations community. It's the Hultsik First Nations community. And I've swam over 100 kilometers. Sorry, I'm not good with the miles. 100 kilometers up there, but staged. And I'm the first person to swim in what's known as the Inside Passage. So this is the passage that the cruise ships and other boats take on their way up to Alaska. So lots of whales. When I first got there, I saw a mama and baby orca.
Wow.
So that was really cool, but very terrifying as well, because I'm like, ooh, guess who I'm going to be swimming with? And on my test swim, I panicked so badly because I wasn't used to seeing so much under the water. There's just an incredible abundance of sea life there. And I'd see all these shadows, and my imagination got hold of me. And I kept thinking, well, if there's a little fish, there's another one that's bigger that's going to eat it. And I kept working it up until I got eaten. So my friend, I sat on a rock and grounded myself and completed it. But the last time I was up there was 2 years ago before COVID. And there were 8 humpbacks that were within range of me during my swim. Wow. And a year prior to that, a humpback swam underneath me.
Really?
Yeah. So to me, that's a privilege. Like, it's a terrifying privilege.
Sure.
But to be in a waterway where you've got humpbacks or any kind of whale that's swimming near you, and it just a really beautiful thing. And there were orcas 2 years ago as well that were swimming off to the side. So that's pretty amazing.
I went on a hiking trip to the northern point of Vancouver Island. I forget what the name of that.
Port Hardy.
No, that's the northernmost part.
Yeah, or Cape Scott.
That was something cool. But anyway, we did a trip up there and we were kayaking with the orcas. It was beautiful, beautiful.
Yeah. It is amazing. You were probably in the Johnson Strait up at Telegraph Cove.
Telegraph Cove. It's exactly where we were. Yeah. What a beautiful area.
Oh, it's amazing. And this is even further up, so it's even more remote.
Okay.
The only way to get to where I swim is you go by ferry or by plane. You can drive into this community. It's very remote. So I do hope to go back again this year and do some more swimming up there, because it's just incredible to be there.
Yeah. And then, so you said you were the first person in the Inside Passage to swim the Inside Passage?
Yep. Yeah, on purpose. Yeah.
That, as opposed to somebody falling out of the boat.
Exactly. They tease me about that up there. They just say, I'm the first one to do it on purpose. And when I first went up there, everybody thought, oh, she's nuts. She's never going to do it. The guy that helps me, Kevin Hennigan, he donates his property to me. And it's an off-the-grid property, so it's no electricity or anything like that. It's quite something. When I first approached him, he didn't think it was going to happen. And then I went and jumped in the water, and he's like, okay, this is getting real. She's really going to do this. And he started having to figure out, how do we make this happen in a way that's safe? Because the other thing, we were going to camp one night between, I was doing back-to-back 25-kilometer swims, and we were going to camp in between, and we found out there were grizzlies. Oof. So it was like, no, you can't camp. So it just, you have to deal with all that kind of stuff. There's wolves that eat from the sea. The bears cross the waterway sometimes. There's all kinds of things going on. So, yeah.
Yeah, I watched that episode of Alone that was filmed in British Columbia.
There you go.
Yeah, don't need to tell me that. I'm well aware.
Yeah, lots of that kind of stuff. So, and that's all foreign to me coming from Montreal. I'm from a concrete jungle. So yes, I'm not used to that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, so, you know, orcas those were so majestic and didn't seem to terrify me, but I think a grizzly would scare me.
A grizzly would absolutely scare me, yes. Yeah.
So the inside, so why, no one ever has swum the Inside Passage before?
No, and the reason I did it was somebody had put a video up of, it's almost like a tanker transporting fuel, oil and gas up to Alaska, which they need up there. I get that. But they're supposed to go on the outside of the passage in case there's ever a spill. Okay. And I didn't really understand why it was an issue. Like, I knew it was, but I didn't really understand. So I wanted to go up and learn about the waterway and why it was so problematic. So that was my reason for doing it. And a year after I went up, that tanker boat hit a reef and sank and spilled all of its fuel in Hulsic territory in the in their farming grounds, because they eat from the ocean. So it became very real for me. Like, I was like, well, like, I know these guys, this is how they survive. Yeah. It's off the wildlife that's there. They don't go to the grocery store the same way that I do. They have them and they use them, but they fish and they hunt. So it became very real, and I'm just really sad to see that happen. So I'm always trying to just understand the waterways and meet the communities through my swims. So I know what's going on.
And what distance was that?
Well, the first one was 25 kilometers. Sorry, I have a phone ringing in the background. And then the second one, 25. But since then, I've done another 50 over different points in time. The water, and this again, you're going to have to translate this for me. But I think I might be able to. One of the times I went up, the water was 9 degrees Celsius. So that's below 50. Fahrenheit.
9 degrees Celsius?
Yeah. And I swim without a wetsuit. I do not use a wetsuit when I swim. So it was so cold, I couldn't make a lot of progress. I was in the water for about 4 hours on one of the swims, and I was like, we're going to have to get me out because I can feel the impact on my body. I'm getting hypothermic. I don't want to have any long-term consequences from this. And so we had to shorten the distances on some of the swims. But the last time we did really well. We had two 20-kilometer swims, so that was, okay. That was good.
It's 48 degrees for those.
Yeah, which is cold. Like there's really not, you don't hear of people staying in the water for over an hour when it's that temperature. It's not, it's uncommon.
Okay.
For that.
Now, a wetsuit kind of violates the English Channel rules that have been established for your sport.
Yeah. So I'm a traditional marathon swimmer. So I use swimsuit, goggles, and a cap, and that's it. A wetsuit would keep me warm and it would help me float. So I would go faster, all that kind of stuff. So it gives you an advantage. And I chose to be traditional. But I think the other thing is that in a wetsuit, if the sun is out, and because they're black, I'm going to get way too warm.
Oh, okay.
So it's best for me to be able to do this naturally. And also to feel the water, to really feel the water.
Yeah.
It's kind of nice to swim without a wetsuit.
So I'm sorry, your next goal, would you say your next goal, what are you shooting for?
I have two swims this year. I just completed one. It was a 21-kilometer swim, so two marathons. My next one is 50 in a place called Powell River at Powell Lake. Uh-huh. Nobody has ever swam this lake that we know of.
It's on the interior, inside of the Vancouver Island, right?
This Powell Lake is on the mainland.
What's on the mainland? Oh, okay.
Yeah, but also only accessible by ferry. There isn't a boat that goes. And it's if you were going up Vancouver Island, it's halfway up and across. So it's a beautiful.
It's on the island, yeah.
It's just across from the island,
right,
on the mainland. So it's quite beautiful, but there are some challenges. They get water spouts because of the thermal winds.
Okay.
So the wind can get quite intense and things like that. So we're just trying to figure it out because it's going to be a 24-hour swim. And we know at some point I'm going to be in some pretty big water.
Okay.
So we'll see what happens with that. And then in September, I go back up to Holtzik territory up near Bella Bella, and I'm going to swim to a place called Hakai. So I'm continuing my journey through the Inside Passage, trying to learn more about the waterway.
That's good. So you doing good for yourself. You're bringing attention to multiple sclerosis, and you're bringing attention to the environmental situation, which is wonderful.
Yeah, and I feel as a person with MS that the environment impacts us.
Yes.
So it's impacted our food. I've heard different theories about the lack of nutrition in our plants and food like that. So things like that. So I think it's important to do that. Air quality, all of those things affect us. But the other thing is, I feel that as a person living with MS, having a sense of calm around me is really important. I don't deal well with stress. So being in a place like that, where it's off the grid, it's calm, I don't have the noise of traffic or ambulances or, you know, people partying or whatever they do, which is fine. You can all do that. But sure. I like peace and quiet. So it's good to get into a place like that when you can, to be in nature.
I'm going to send my wife up there for 2 weeks to decompress with you.
Well, we've talked about having an MS camp up there.
I was the exact words I was going to use, an MS camp.
And I know that Kev would be totally into this. We just have to make sure that the property is prepared for people. But I think, to be off the grid like that and just to be able to sit there and maybe draw or paint or do whatever. Just relax. Is so healthy for everybody because the world is a bit chaotic at times.
Yeah, we've taken Jen to our climbs. Not necessarily climbing, we take her to our climbs, and she goes back a different person every time. Just
oh yeah, yeah, she's out there with you. But, I mean, the other thing is that I find with MS, like one of my big concerns right now, and why I'm swimming in Powell River, is the community there with MS has been disconnected through COVID. They stopped all the programs. There was no virtual meetings. Nobody knows anybody anymore and is in touch with anybody. So the swim is a way to bring that community back together and raise funds for programs for them there.
Okay.
Because we don't, our MS Society stopped most of our people-to-people programs. So I want to make sure, because I know that we need that social interaction. So yeah, getting out there and being involved with people is part of how we stay healthy.
Yes, yes.
And a lot of people with MS live in isolation. It's a little frightening to see what happens in the same way that I isolated myself and spent that first 10 years living at home. Right. When you're isolated, you just don't do as well.
You're out of your house now. So I see that you're a coach, a motivational speaker. What do you consider your occupation to be these days?
Well, I have a full-time job outside of all these other things.
Oh, you do? Okay.
But I work for the province of British Columbia. I'm a very proud public servant, and I specifically work in information technology. So within project and portfolio management, strategic planning. So that's my day job, and that's part of what makes it possible for me to do these swims and be able to afford the privilege of being able to do that. But outside of that, and where I'm trying to go with my retirement is, I coach Special Olympics. So yeah, I mean, that's so good for your soul. You couldn't ask for a more loving community to lift your spirit.
My brother-in-law, he's Down syndrome. He was a swimmer. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, I loved it.
So when I first started coaching, I was just getting a lay of the land. But then I realized that, like myself, I was limited with competitive swimming, and I wanted to do more. So I challenged them. I challenged Special O, some of the athletes, to open water swimming. And we formed a club called the Spirit Orcas. Nine of them. There's now 9 Spirit Orcas, and they've gone to swim up in Great Bear. Two of them just did 21 kilometer swims. There's a group of them training to swim across the English Channel. Malia has Down syndrome. She's the first person we know of with Down syndrome to swim 5 kilometers without a wetsuit. This year she's going to attempt 10. So in the same way that I was told you can't do that, and I ended up not being healthy, I feel sometimes people with disabilities are told that. They are. I don't feel it. They are. So I decided to untell them that. And now they have this amazing swim club that is achieving things that able-bodied people or people that don't have intellectual disabilities haven't achieved. And they're sharing that message around the world.
That's great. How far is the English Channel? What swim is that? How far is
The English Channel is around 29 kilometers, so 19 miles. And it takes anywhere from 9 to 16 hours. For them on a relay, it'll take about 12.
So when are you going to go up and back then?
Sorry. Oh, yeah. Well, I tried that in Juan de Fuca one year. I swam across Juan de Fuca Strait, which is the same distance as the English Channel, but way colder. So and way more current. So not a lot of people have done it. There's only 5 of us in the world who have swum it. That particular route. And it's because it's so hard. Like the English Channel is hard. Juan de Fuca, it's just off the charts. So I swam that. I was trying to raise money for people with MS in my community. And I wanted to give them hope because their MS center had closed. So I needed to say, well, I love you. And I think you're important. So I'm going to do this. I'm going to swim across Juan de Fuca Strait, and we're going to raise money for MS to help get our center started, which we were able to do. So I did that. And then crazy me thought, let me do it twice. But we had a lot of forest fires that year, and the water was really cold because there was no sun on it. It dropped to about 9 degrees, and the air temperature plummeted 10 to 15 degrees within an hour when the sun set. It just got so cold that I became hypothermic. I might do it, and I might try it another time. We'll see what happens. You never know. Yeah.
You're amazing. Amazing.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Some people call me crazy, but thank you. That's a much nicer way to say it.
I'll call that a good crazy. I've got a lot of crazy friends, but I call them good crazy. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, try things as long as you're staying safe. Like, if you can minimize risk and stay safe, try it. Like, get out there and do stuff and live your best possible self. Live a great life.
That's wonderful. And it's so great to hear that from you, because everyone, as you said, talk about we can't do it. Let's try it.
Yeah. And my thing is, when people say you can't do something, what I like to say is, how can I help? How can I help you do that? You want to do that? Yes. What can I do to help you get there? Yeah. And we need to change that. We all need to start doing that and say, okay, well, maybe you can't do it tomorrow, but if you train for it in 5 years, maybe you can do it. So let's see if you can.
That's great. That's great. Because here in this podcast, we kind of, you know, we've interviewed a whole bunch of people. I think Gary Pinder connected us because we had a woman who climbed the Seven Summits with multiple sclerosis.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Amazing. And able-bodied people who have climbed Everest K2 and people who have soloed to the South Pole. And, you know, we're just trying to get a sense of, for those of us struggling with whatever we're struggling with, depression, we're struggling with multiple sclerosis, we're struggling with cancer, where we're just struggling. What advice do you have to help them achieve their best life?
I say to surround yourself with, well, first of all, I want to say to everyone, and I do this all the time, you are of value. You have value in this world. We're beat down all the time. Like when we, you know, when I was sent home, go home, don't do anything, just stay at home. That sends a message of you have no value anymore. That's not true. Every person in the world has value. You're important. So recognize that you have value. And then find people who lift you up.
Okay.
Hang out with people that go, yeah, I'll give you a hand with that, or I believe in you. Surround yourself with that. And it's just amazing what can happen. And then it starts catching, like it caught, the spirit orcas caught it from me, right? Now they're sharing the spirit with everybody else. And we can just make a better world if we all help one another do amazing, wonderful things instead of pulling each other apart.
Yes, yes. We have that challenge, certainly in the States and all around the world.
Yeah, and I want to be part of that. I want to be part of the group of people that passes on this great, wonderful, infectious thing known as finding your joie de vie, your joy for life.
Yes. You learn a lot of French in Montreal.
It is a Francophone community predominantly, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So how can people find you? How can people watch your swims or find you on social or reach out to you for questions?
Sure. I have a website. I have a few of them, but the best way is susansimmons.ca. So SIMMONS.ca. Or Google Susan Simmons Swim and you should find me. And you'll see all my social media there. Okay. Plus you'll see at the base of the page in the footer, the other websites. And the other websites, one is MS Athlete, which is devoted to people with MS and some of the things that I did when I first started training, some of the supplements I used, how I managed depression, that kind of stuff. Another one is for my MS swims and another one is the Great Bear Rainforest. Okay. Swim. So I had to kind of section them off because I was getting a bit too busy.
I was going to ask you how you fit everything in with your day job too. You have all this training, all this work, and you still have a day job.
And still have a day job. Yeah. I'm over 50. I don't sleep a lot.
Oh man, that's great. Yes. We'll put all the information in the show notes so people can find you and, you know, reach out if they're struggling, maybe.
That's very kind. And I'm always happy to talk to people, whether it's MS or something else. If you just need a little boost, a little bit of virtual love from someone to remind you that you're of value, right? Like find something you love doing and bring your people with you.
That's beautiful. Beautiful. Because, you know, you went from not being able to walk for 31 minutes to be able to swim in the open water for 31 hours. It's quite an accomplishment and inspirational.
I think everybody, it's possible for people to achieve amazing things. You just got to get out there and do it.
It's awesome.
Right? Do you ever have a mountain that you wanted to climb that you thought, I can't do this?
Yes.
And yes. What happened?
You know, I kept putting one foot in front of the other and made it to the summit.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Bit by bit, right? You don't get there overnight. You just go slowly and enjoy the ride.
Yeah, I'd like to stop, take a look back and see how far we've come and then keep going forward.
Yeah. So, I have a friend, Pippa Blake. She has MS and her family brought her to the base camp. She's somebody who's in a wheelchair. They carried her there at Everest. So she was able to participate that way.
Beautiful. Yeah, it's so powerful. You know, we took Jennifer in a wheelchair up somewhere, and it was a lot of hard work for her. Her core and getting bounced around in the altitude, and it showed her a lot.
A lot of trust.
Yeah, a lot of trust. Trust being in that wheelchair. Absolutely. I put me in there. I wasn't very happy in there for like 10 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if I could do that. She has a lot of mental fortitude to do. That's good for her.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait for her to listen to this episode because you're going to inspire her with so many other people.
I hope to do that. And I hope that she thrives and just does well.
Get the word out to the MS community that exercise, diet, and mindset is all beneficial.
Yeah, you like find what works for you.
Yes. And
I don't know any doctor that would tell anybody that exercise is bad. They just seem to have done that to those of us with MS at one point.
Yeah. I think they're now encouraging it. Now it's just
figuring
out how you can make it work for your feet and your heat and pain and all the other things.
Yeah. And veggies over potato chips, right?
Yeah. I think she'd rather run a marathon and give up, you know, than do that. Absolutely.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Thanks for your time.
Well, thank you so much. I'm so thrilled to meet you. And I want to watch what you're doing because it's pretty incredible.
Well, maybe you'll actually join. You'll get out of the water and get into the mountains sometime.
You never know. You take good care.
Thanks. We'll visit you up there sometime too. Have a great day.
Okay. All right, bye. Bye.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode, and we encourage you to share it with the people in your life who might benefit from hearing Susan's story. Today's episode is brought to you by Rind Snacks, a natural and healthy source of fiber, vitamins, and antioxidants that's both better for you and our planet. Visit rindsnacks.com and use the discount code BRAVE at checkout to receive 15% off your order. This episode is also brought to you by Kuju Coffee, a quality cup of coffee at home or on the go. Visit kujucoffee.com and use the discount code KUJU20 at checkout to receive 20% off your order. If you've enjoyed today's episode, then just imagine how much you, your team, and the community you serve would benefit from the live experience as a workshop or keynote address. Visit our website, itsthecliMPodcast.com, to learn more about our leadership and team building programs, and that link is also listed in the description of today's episode. Until next time, we are Jonas and Andy, and this has been another episode of It's the Climb.